They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise me.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all, it's your boy. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. It is very lovely to be back up in the studio with my co-host, my man, to the right, film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonzo Duralde. Sir, hermano, people, what is good with you?
I am in love with a new Twitter account that is called Movie Premieres Unlimited. It's at Night Opening, okay. And it is nothing but red carpet photos of movie premieres late 90s and early 2000s.
Yes!
Oh, my fashions have changed.
I started following them today, dude. I'm sorry to interrupt.
You look at Tom and Nicole on the red carpet for Eyes Wide Shut, and it's like, wow.
Is she just like wearing a slip dress and a baby tee?
Something. It's a whole nother world, you know. And what's great also is they dig out these movies that you forgot, frankly, existed at all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh yeah, that's right, that Man in the Iron Mask with Leonardo DiCaprio. I had forgotten about that one.
Yes.
So yeah, it's giving me joy.
I saw today they posted the premiere of Scream 2 with all of the Arquettes in attendance.
Oh.
And I was like, yes.
That was Neve Campbell's like hard eyebrow period.
Hard eyebrow period. I like that a lot.
I'm trying to think. What was it? They posted the Scream 2 today, and then they had another premiere where I can't remember what the movie was, but Sinbad was there looking fantastic.
He should be at all of them.
That was my thought, bro. I was like, man, how come Sinbad is not just like a regular at these bitches?
And one of the things is, like, we would not be surprised if he was just like in all of the photos for all of the premieres
time.
Yeah.
Somebody invited him.
Yes.
That voice that you hear right there, she is the host of the Switchblade Sisters podcast right here on Max Fun, the one and only April Wolf. What is good with you?
I started watching a show called Miracle Workers.
Okay.
And I'm really into it. It's like a limited series comedy, and it's Steve Buscemi and Daniel Radcliffe lead it. But
yes.
Then it also has one of my new favorite actresses, Geraldine Viswanathan. And she is really, really funny. And she keeps showing up in random stuff. She was in Blockers, which is where most people know her from. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really into her. There's also another actor that I'm super into, Karan Soni. He is so funny. He had like a guest on...
He's in the Deadpool movies, right?
Yes. He's like the cab driver of the Deadpool movies, and he had a guest spot on Brooklyn Nine-Nine recently. Mm. And he's just so funny and deadpan and weird. Mm. And the whole show is so funny. But it's about Steve Buscemi playing God.
I'm in.
Yeah, and everyone, and he's like, I'm going to blow up the Earth, right? So he decides he's going to blow up the Earth because he gets bored. And so then all these people like have to team together to try to convince him that the Earth is like salvageable and that it's not just a bunch of people wrecking all the shit. I'm quite enjoying it. And I like the idea that it is a limited series, so it's probably not going to come back, you know? Mm-hmm. So just enjoy it while it's there.
Smoking while you got it.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So
Ricky, what's good?
Oh, damn!
No follow-ups.
Nothing. Let's just get to it. I'm something like Verona Swan. I just wanted to get that in there real quick about old girl. Shout out to De La Soul. What is good? I mean, it's what time is it right now here in Los Angeles on a lovely Tuesday night? It's 7:07. The sun is still out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm loving that.
I love it. Well, I get to go jogging and not worry about getting raped at night.
Boom.
Fine. Okay.
You beat me to it, April. You beat me to it.
It's those small things that I'm just like, yay, I get to be outside more.
Way to make my preference for standard time seem totally abhorrent. Oh. I got nothing now.
Apparently, I was at work in my office today, but apparently we were attacked by butterflies today.
Yeah.
I missed that, but that's a beautiful thing. What else is going on? I've spent way too much money because I'm working again. I spent way too much money on buying Blu-rays.
Oh.
Criterion flash sale or other?
I mean... This is a segment for another time.
This is a separate segment?
Yes.
I do like, there's a flash one in your eyes. Where it's like, this is another story.
Ricky's physical media corner.
This is the first time where Criterion has emailed, and I take it as a personal email to me, that all of their, you know, their whole catalog is 50% off. and I couldn't pick anything. I was just kind of disappointed in all their options.
Because you'd bought it all.
I've either bought it all, have seen it all, or it's so obscure that I'm like, granted, I should be willing to pay $15 for an obscure movie recommended to me by Criterion.
Sure.
I should be like, all right, I'm all in. But there's so many movies that just jump to my brain that I want to see Criterion already involved with and working on that I'm like, if you're not...
Like Howard's End.
Like, like Howard's End, Pootie Tang.
Soul Plane.
Soul Plane. But there's like there's certain movies. Like, why do you not have a movie that I yell about all the time on here, When We Were Kings? Available through Criterion. So many...
Isn't that coming out on Criterion?
I don't know.
Girl.
Maybe.
But I mean, there was some
announcement. Don't get me hype right now.
The thing with Criterion is you have to remember, like, they're not an actual studio in the classic sense. So, like, a movie like When We Were Kings or, you know, a lot of the Castaway stuff or whatever, they have to deal with whoever owns it.
Correct.
You know, like, when they put out Love Streams, they had to get it from whoever's running the Canon Films library these days, you know? So, yeah, I mean, and I think a lot of studios either, like, decide they don't want to deal with it or they maybe their terms are ridiculous, but, you know, we should appreciate what we have.
100%. They do such a great job at, like, having either the obscure films or movies that I haven't heard of or movies that I have heard of that I'm just, like, not sure about yet, where when I want them to do movies that might be, you know, a little bit more mainstream according to Criterion, I want them – I don't need The Rock Criterion Collection. I don't need Armageddon on Criterion Collection. I want them to stop making those choices.
I think those were kind of outliers, to be fair, though. I mean, those two happened, and we were like, whoa.
What are you doing?
I think since then, they've kept it pretty, you know, close to the brand.
I mean, what I'm saying is, can I get When We Were Kings on Criterion Blu-ray up in this piece,
please? I just want to spend the rest of the show Googling to see if they are doing that.
Hey, y'all, on today's episode, we are going to be talking about the new Marvel film, Captain Marvel. We are going to be having a discussion of Marvel movies in general, and as always, we will have our staff picks. And now it's time for our new segment, It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. We're all going to read a news blurb or headline, and we're going to answer two simple questions, y'all. Is this important? Do I care? Alonzo, you are hot and heavy on this first story here, sir.
It was missing from the list. I was like, no, we got to talk about
this. We're literally in the midst of it.
Indeed. Breaking. In a huge federal indictment that broke on Tuesday, over 50 wealthy parents were accused of, quote, carrying out a nationwide fraud to get students into prestigious colleges, unquote. The most famous name on the list of the accused is Desperate Housewives actress and Oscar nominee Felicity Huffman. Huffman is accused of paying $15,000 to William Rick Singer's fake charity, the Key Worldwide Foundation, to facilitate cheating for her daughter on the SATs. She was arrested Tuesday at her home. She was taped on the phone discussing the scheme to a cooperative witness. Huffman is married to movie star William H. Macy, or as Stephen Colbert calls them collectively, Philium F. Muffman. Is this important? Do you care?
$15,000, that seems kind of lowball.
Yeah, it seemed like she, it's like for her specifically, because like, fucking
to cheat on the SATs.
Right? A lot of them were giving like $500,000, right? So for her to give like 15, she's like kind of just throwing spaghetti at the wall with like maybe multiple things that she's doing, or just like we're also doing prep classes. Like she's like, well, maybe
I'm also underwriting French Club. You never know.
Yeah.
It's $15,000. Here's a box set to Sport Night.
Look, don't rich people just buy libraries for colleges like with the old-fashioned way? Why do you gotta cheat on the SATs and make up being on the crew team when you're not? Like,
it's because
it seems way too complicated.
You need to give more money. So the way that I was looking at it is just like these rich people just weren't giving enough money to make their donation legal.
So they're corrupt and cheap.
Like, yeah, because like they can give it to these people to do this, you know, corruption and bribery. But if they had to do a real donation to make it count, they would have to give like $1 million to make that a thing. That, I mean, Jared Kushner's dad gave $2.5 million to Harvard, at least. to get him in. You know, like there's, it's just a, like they would just have to give more money than 15 grand. They're like,
And Hallmark Channel queen Lori Loughlin is caught up in all this too.
Becky. I'm Becky with the good hair.
Aunt Becky, or somebody tweeted, Aunt Becky with the dumb airs. I did not know she was married to Massimo.
Yeah, me neither.
She's married to the guy behind the Massimo fashion. Oh, wow.
Massimo Giannulli?
Giannulli, I think.
Giannulli, yeah.
But yeah, they apparently agreed to pay bribes totaling $500,000 in exchange for having their two daughters designated as recruits to the USC crew team, even though they did not participate in crew.
That shit is the weirdest stuff where they fucking Photoshop on their heads. To athletes, or like put props together of like them holding, like holding the props an and then like on a green screen. It's like, but they seriously, they bought stuff on Amazon, like lacrosse things or something, and like did a green screen and like put them in, lied to admissions people. It was just like, no, they were big in China. They literally said that. They're like, yeah, they were big athletes in China. And like, what?
Oh, this is a DC story, so I think Ricky's got to take it.
Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, Idris Elba, my man, King Dries. Shout out to King Dries, who was just hosting SNL this past weekend. It's announced he's going to be taking over the role of Deadshot for the Suicide Squad sequel.
Oh, no.
Oh, R.I.P. to the role that was originally played by Will Smith. Apparently, Will Smith had to bow out earlier this month due to scheduling conflicts, including... We see you on Instagram, Will Smith. We know how busy you are. Now, including Jared Leto as the Joker and Ben Affleck as Batman, this is the third actor change in the DC universe in the past year. Is this important? Do you all care?
I haven't said this in a while. No.
I don't know why Idris Elba is doing this to himself. Like, you don't have to do this.
I think he passed his, like, 007 window, and he's like, I need a franchise.
Well, we're going to talk about Marvel movies later, and one of the things that I'm going to bring up later that I will just mention really quick right now is I will say I do like what DC is doing as far as, like, it seems like they are just now starting to bring in directors who they want to work with, and the actors are becoming interchangeable. And I kind of like this idea of like, oh, okay, if you're not going to go for what Marvel's doing as far as like creating this huge cinematic universe, you just want to bring directors in and they're going to do their own take on whatever the standalone story might be. I'm into that. So if Will Smith is out and Idris Elba is in, I guess I'm just more interested to see what James Gunn is going to bring to this, to the franchise.
Yeah, I think we need to back up because James Gunn is writing and directing.
Yes.
So, like,
yes.
DC has taken James Gunn.
Yeah, the second Disney had issues with him and let him go, they were like, we got a job for you.
Yeah, oh, yeah, totally.
So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. That piques my interest.
Sure.
I mean, Suicide Squad was so bad that Will Smith is out. Cool. They're bringing somebody else in and maybe that's going to be the change they need.
They got that Harley Quinn movie coming out.
That's
too,
coming
right?
as well. Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like the standalone. Huh.
Yeah, yeah. It's got like a crazy title as well. It's like Birds of Prey and.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, Birds of Prey is like a in the comics is is sort of an all female.
Yes, Birds
you know,
of
hero team.
Yes, Birds of Prey is Harley Quinn. I believe it's Batgirl.
Oh, okay.
And one other
Poison Ivy
female
or
DC character.
It sounds so cyberpunk, you guys. It reminds me of like Y2K shit. I'm in. I love Y2K shit.
I would be all on board with that. Hell yeah. April, close us out with this one here.
All right. You may not know this, but Julianne Moore was originally cast in the role of Lee Israel in the film Can You Ever Forgive Me? Before Melissa McCarthy took over the role. This past week, she actually discussed her exit from the film on Andy Cohen's Watch What Happens Live. Let's listen to the clip.
I have a question for Julianne. Actually, I'm curious about why did you leave the movie Can You Ever Forgive Me? And what did you think about Melissa McCarthy in that role?
I didn't leave that movie. I was fired.
Were you?
Yeah, yeah. Nicole fired me. Really?
So, yeah,
was
that's
there
the truth.
Reason that you...
I think she didn't like what I was doing.
Oh, really? Yeah. So you started shooting it?
No, we hadn't shot... We hadn't been... We'd just been kind of rehearsing and doing pre-production and stuff, and I think that her idea of where the character was different than where my idea of the character was, and so she fired me.
And did you see the movie?
I haven't yet, because it's still kind of painful. I love Melissa McCarthy. I worship her. I think she's fantastic, so I'm sure she's great.
Wow.
The director, Nicole, that she's talking about is Nicole Holofcener, who fired Julianne Moore, eventually left the project as well, and she was replaced by Marielle Heller, a sister of Emily Heller, but she was also still served as a producer on... Nicole served as a producer stage.
And credited co-writer and Oscar nominee?
Yeah, and winner of multiple awards outside of that, too. So is this important, and do you care?
I'm fascinated that it happened because this is the first time hearing about it. But I also love the candor for saying, "Yeah, they can be."
Yeah,
like that's you don't ever hear anybody say that.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't necessarily care about this, but I love that Julianne Moore is just getting in front of it and being like, "Hey, it didn't work. I had my idea for the character, and Nicole had hers, and it didn't work out. So she told me to be on my way, and it's." That's great.
And they asked Holofcener, who said, let's just say creative differences and very last-minute creative differences at that. And really, literally, that's the truth. It's never pleasant for anybody, but that's the truth. And that was hard. A really hard period. And I think Marielle Heller did a good job. I've seen it. It's good.
Mm. So, I mean, best case scenario, right?
Yeah, everybody wins.
Yeah. This doesn't feel like it's there was any kind of like ill will. I actually just watched Can You Ever Forgive Me for the first time last week, and I thought Melissa McCarthy was fantastic in it. And then when I heard about this story, I was like, I would watch another version of this movie with Julianne Moore in it. That sounds great to me.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like Julianne Moore gets canned from a gig. It's not like she doesn't have four other ones waiting in the wings. So I'm sure she's like, these things happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, waltzed into something else.
Yeah, this is one of the few times where it's like, it feels like an amicable split.
Sure.
Mutually, they had, you know, the creative differences, and they just went on their separate ways. So I was... happy to hear Julianne Moore was fired and like figured it the fuck out.
You're like, yeah.
I'm not supposed to be here. I'm out. All right, yo, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after we hear from another one of our Max Fun podcasts.
Hi, it's me, Paula Poundstone.
And it's me, Adam Felber.
We have a podcast called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. It's a comedy podcast where we bring on experts to teach us stuff we need to know.
And by the way, the guy who came to tell us what to do when you encounter a bear never showed up.
Anyway, it's fun. You are guaranteed laughs in every episode.
You can't really guarantee laughs. What if somebody doesn't laugh? We'll get sued.
Join us for our next episode when we have an expert in consumer law explain to us how to defend ourselves against one humorless, litigious shut-in with enough time on their hands to sue us over our unfulfilled claim of guaranteed laughs in every episode here at MaximumFun.org.
The Cat of the Week is Mabel from Green Bank, West Virginia.
Welcome back to Hushaya. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio are...
April Wolf.
Alonso Duraldi.
We thought we would take this segment of the show to talk about Marvel movies, the state of what their actually next step is going to be, what Marvel Studios is going to be doing next. We are actually at the end of Phase 2. Now that Endgame will be coming to us in about a month and a half, we're moving officially into Phase 3. So we want to talk about what they might have in store for us. Alonso, I know how much you, dare I say, despise giving us a synopsis on a film, but this week was the release of Captain Marvel. Can you give us a brief synopsis of said film?
Okay, so it's 1995, and we meet Vierce, who is a female warrior on the Kree planet of Hala.
Hello.
Thank you. I knew somebody was going to take us there. She is training in battle. She's played by Brie Larson, is training in battle with Jude Law. And she keeps seeing flashes of her past involving an explosion and Annette Bening, but she doesn't know what it all means. And
she doesn't know who Annette Bening is. Annette Bening isn't in the world.
Right. Because the actual Annette Bening. It's a character played by Annette Bening. Thank you for clarifying that. I wouldn't want people to think.
It's Annette Bening from
The
Grifters.
I saw Bugsy, but I can't remember her name. Anyway, So she is part of a warrior race known as the Kree. They have been engaged in battle for years with the Skrulls, who are shape-shifting aliens. And in the course of battling the Skrulls, she finds herself on Earth. She crashes into a Blockbuster Video that I mentioned. It's 1995. She is found by Nick Fury, still with two functioning eyes.
A young,
digitally de-aged Sam Jackson.
Which is funny because it's like, I don't know, you look at him now and you're like, it still kind of looks the same.
Yeah. I mean, he looks great.
He still looks
Sam
great.
Sam Jackson today at 70 looks great.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You tint the hair a little, you're in good shape. And also a de-aged Clark Gregg as
Agent Coulson.
Agent Coulson, thank you.
Yes.
Flew out of my mind. Anyway, so while they are trying to, she's trying to remember who the hell she is, Earth is finding itself in the middle of the Kree-Skrull War, and all of this, of course, is an elaborate setup to explain what the heck was on Nick Fury's pager at the end of Avengers Infinity War, and so here we are.
If they would have sold this movie as a movie based on Nick Fury's pager, I would be all in. I was still all in on it.
It's literally called Nick Fury's pager.
Furious pager.
Furious pager.
Solid.
And that's who Sam Jackson plays in Jungle Fever. Furious pager.
It's Furious Styles' cousin from Boys in the Hood. Mm-hmm. That is Captain Marvel, y'all. Now, the outside of that, Captain Marvel is the 21st movie in the Marvel
MCU.
In the MCU. It is the first female-led superhero movie.
We come a long
MCU,
way.
Yes. In the MCU, yes.
We didn't want to rush into anything.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see all these other motherfuckers do something. It is also the first movie directed by a woman, but it also has a co-director
who
is a man. It has the unfair, in my opinion, unfair... what's the word I'm looking for?
Unfair advantage.
Being compared to Wonder Woman.
Sure.
As far as like being like one of these firsts.
Right.
It has this unfair thing of like it is now in the first category. It is the first movie to do this. It is the first movie to do that. It is the first movie to do all
these
things.
Yeah, it can't just be a movie.
Exactly. And we by the time we get to talking about it being a movie, all these other things are almost like unfairly leveled against it. That the responsibility it has are like, oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, obviously somebody had to be first, but of course they didn't have to be first 21 movies in.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's 2019.
I love that, like, you know, Marvel's congratulating themselves, like, you did it, girls! And it's just like, you were the one who told us we can! Like, are you doing
no one
this?
Was stopping you from doing this before.
You kept telling us to wait. Oh, we're ready now! Wait. We need
it's finally happening, and you're like, well, thank you.
Because you made it happen? Yeah. And right then, after not making it happen?
Right after this Ant-Man movie. Oh, all right, we got
to
wait for
it. Yes, we have to make two Ant-Man movies before we can get to
it. We got two Galaxy of the Guardians movies as well.
Before we can get to, what is it, Captain Girl?
Captain Girl and the Cat?
Well, how did we feel? Were you able to enjoy this movie without all of those...
I don't see things. Gender.
No. Oh, okay. All right.
It's a medical condition. No. I tried to not have that stuff weigh it down as much as possible. Because for me, being an MCU movie is its own set of pressure to live up to, you know, this franchise. Because they get it right way more than they get it wrong.
Yep.
And they do have this gigantic overarching story to tell. And they... did tease this out at the end of the last Avengers movie, so there was going to be a certain level of how do we circle back to that exact point, and how exactly are we going to get there?
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of fun. I thought I had a really good time. I you know, Brie Larson gets the tone right in terms of playing this character who is almost sort of at times giddy with this amazing power that she has, but is of course constantly surrounded by people that tell her to, like, you know, bury her feelings and, you know, not use them all the way, and, you know, like, you're constantly trying to sort of tamp her down, which is interesting metaphorically, but I don't think the movie overplays that notion.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She. It's the kind of trope of, I think, what women call the kid sister syndrome, where you know you become kind of like the spunky kid sister version of a woman in a movie or a TV show, and she, you know, she starts out as that kind of character, but then she does have an arc. You know, she's, and what happens in real life when you get out of the spunky kid sister thing is what happens in the movie, where like the men don't like you as much. Like, I liked you when you were my kid sister, and then I could kind of boss you around a little bit, and then like they get a little uncomfortable all of a sudden. So I was in agreement with Alonzo. I wrote my review for him at The Wrap, but I gave it around like an 89-90 kind of thing.
I have a running ranking list at The Wrap of Marvel movies.
Okay,
this is solidly in the middle.
In the middle, okay.
Yeah. Like there are the really, I think, great ones, and then there are like the solidly entertaining ones that are fun chapters. They don't necessarily do anything wrong. They just don't blow you away, but they keep the whole, you know, caravan moving forward.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it's solidly there.
I really did. I tend to, like, as I was writing this review, going through it, I actually liked it the more that I was writing about it. And I was like, oh, that is an interesting thing that they did, or an interesting choice. Yeah. Where, you know, I was looking at the costumes, and I think maybe we talked about this a little bit before, and the costumes were a really interesting choice for the 90s because they actually represent 90s culture. They have a, what's the word that we came up with?
Deconstructed.
The deconstructed look of, you know, kind of like a PC kind of sewn together thing that was really popular around that time in like Star Trek movies and in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And the costume designer that they hired actually did a lot of sci-fi movies in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. So she did Star Trek Insurgents, and she did Blade, and she did Mission to Mars. There's a certain kind of authenticity that is updated for it. Some of the music that I was really into was the stuff that was kind of throwback to the weird influx of action sci-fi movies that we had in the 90s. You know, like you could hear, I wished it happened more often so I have like a complete identity, but it kept reverting back to the kind of, you know, triumphant Captain Marvel thing.
Score,
but,
yes.
Yeah, but there were parts of the score that I thought were really interesting in certain spots. We were like, oh, this is that sci-fi action movie that I remember. You know, like, this is fucking Event Horizon, motherfuckers. You know, I was just like, I know what this is.
Yes. Yeah. Yes to everything that all of you have said. I liked how this movie was kind of similar to Ant-Man, was on the outside of the overall where these movies are headed. This didn't feel like everything that happens in this movie has to do with the next Avengers movie.
True.
It felt like an outlier, and I really liked that.
And being a prequel, I think, gives them that leeway.
Yes.
Where, like, you know, Tony Stark isn't a thing yet, and, you know, the whatever else is, you know, Captain America hasn't thawed yet. Like, all this stuff hasn't happened, so they don't have to be mired in that.
Yeah. I like that they just kind of kept it to, we're going to introduce this character, we're going to put it in 1995, so, I mean, it kind of literally talks to us, and, you know, if you're bringing kids to this movie, they're not going to get those things, but
they won't know what Alta Vista was.
And then, as far as, the wardrobe, actually, I need Marvel superheroes, Tony Stark, all y'all motherfuckers, stop buying shirts at Target. If I see another Marvel superhero that has a T-shirt with the name of a band on there, or Bruce Lee with headphones on, like, all right, go somewhere else. Go to the fucking dollar store.
You didn't like the Nine Inch Nails shirt?
No, I was like,
oh my god, that was so 95 though. I remember like two of the girls in my class had a Nine Inch Nails shirt and jeans like that.
Is that right?
Okay. But they would do the French tuck. They didn't. I think that she had like a shorter shirt that was like tucked in all around. But
and then she had the wraparound flannel shirt too.
Yeah. Yes. Definitely that wore that shit. Like,
yeah. On the reg.
I was trying to like go back to like my music T-shirts that I wore back then, and I had two Pearl Jam shirts and a Tribe Called Quest shirt.
Yeah.
And the people who were
pretty
in,
standard.
Yes. And my friends who were into like Nine Inch Nails, they didn't have Nine Inch Nails shirt. They just wore black all the time.
Yeah.
Or it was just more of like a full kind of piece that was, I just, I didn't know anybody who had a Nine
Maybe
Inch Nails shirt.
Maybe they weren't posers then.
They weren't posers. No, they weren't. No.
You were not living in the suburbs. Though. You were in the city.
There's a lot of posers out there.
You bring up that they're introducing a character, and I think one of the sort of most dreaded tropes now of the superhero movie is the origin story. Mm. And so I thought at least the fact that she has amnesia means that, like, she's learning her own story as we are and learning it in sort of fits and starts and snippets and trying to stitch it all together. And that made that go down more easily for me. Like, it didn't feel like another, you know, reluctant hero or whatever, kind of da-da-da-da, the steps of, you know, the bitten by the spider, whatever right. it takes. You know, like, this felt like, okay, if we're going to do an origin story at this late stage in the game when we all know an origin story mm-hmm. by heart,
yes.
you're doing it well.
Yeah. Yeah. When I watched this movie, I thought it was just fine. And then afterwards, literally walking home and talked to my girlfriend about it, and she loved it. She thought it was fantastic, and I was just like, oh, I thought it was okay. My first big thing where I was like, I wasn't crazy about Brie Larson's, whether it was
hair.
She didn't smile enough.
Why wasn't she smiling more? Just be happy. How come nobody's asking her to be happy? It was strange to me that she was such a blank slate. Mm. And what made sense to me, where I was like on board with it, was she's like, she doesn't remember things. And she is like, she's just having like flashes of memory come back to her. But I was like, in my mind, I was just like, why isn't she having fun with that? And then I was told, and it made me just kind of be like, okay, was like when somebody is suffering from trauma, whether it is loss of memory, whether it is something that has happened to you, there is this sense of, I don't know who I am right now, so it's going to be a process to find out how I can get to who I really am and who I can be. When I heard that, after the fact, I was like, oh, well, fucking fantastic. I'm all on board with that. But when I was watching the movie, I was just kind of like, having that really fucking ignorant male, hey, how come she isn't just like being funny right now? How come she's not smiling more? How come she's not doing these things that I'm used to seeing a dude do in superhero
especially
movies?
In a Marvel movie that tend to be on the jokier side.
Exactly. Afterwards, I was much more able to appreciate, like, oh yeah, well then I guess I just don't need my Marvel superheroes to be fucking funny all the time.
Yeah, she's got PTSD.
Yes, which my brain it has not been trained to recognize that and internalize that and be like, okay, I get it. I'm more just like, well, how come you don't have a one-liner to like ease attention?
Right.
So I appreciated that after the fact way much more. Then it was just like, oh, I like that choice.
There's also the choice that they made to not make her character super dark, which I appreciate. Mm-hmm. Because like, yeah, we're talking about like some trauma and some stuff like that, but she's not just like, woe is me, no one will understand. It's more just like,
I'm trying,
you know? Yes. Like, and I don't know what it is, but I'm trying. And
yeah, absolutely.
It's a different tone than I'm used to.
Yeah, and it just took me a second to get used to that.
There's a thing, what did I write about it for? It might have been for my Point Break article that I wrote, where I was talking about the kind of shift that happened in like the early 2000s that applies to all action movies, where a lot of the heroes ended up kind of taking this weird diehard route, in a sense, where the characters went to being having a defense mechanism of humor to deal with trauma. And we've kind of run with that for a very long time, specifically the male characters that we have. And so it's an expected trope to have this defense mechanism of humor. And so that's when you get those cutting kind of witty jokes. That's where you get the Iron Man kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Where just like, he's in pain, but he's going to make a joke about it because he can't deal. And so like seeing I was like, oh, she's actually feeling something and allowing herself to feel without letting it take her down, which is, it's just a different thing.
It totally was. And I've said this before on the show, where like I'm much more excited to watch this movie now a second time.
Uh-huh.
Going in like knowing that, I think I'll enjoy it even more.
And while they're very subtle about, as you said, they aren't tying everything into the sort of the big plot of these movies, they do set up a character who I'm very excited to see. Hopefully, maybe even turning up in like Avengers Endgame,
Cat.
But Well, the cat,
yes.
definitely. But also her friend Maria's young daughter, Monica.
Oh, little Monica.
Little Monica in 1995 is going to be adult Monica in 2019.
Oh, damn.
And Monica Rambeau in Marvel is also Captain Marvel, is one of the Captain Marvels.
Oh, is that? Ooh.
So that would be.
Oh, and she's got her bomber jacket.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she left her bomber jacket with Lil Monica.
Yeah.
Can we talk about, in my opinion, what I thought were the two best scenes in the movie, where Monica's daughter is helping her pick out the suit?
Yeah, the colors. Yeah.
Ugh, like, I was just like, hell yeah, great scene. And then when we are jumping through the different eras of Carol Danvers' life, and she's like standing up.
The Nike commercial.
That was,
yeah.
Well, my joke is.
I don't mean that in a bad way.
No.
But it was a Nike commercial.
If Chumbawamba's Tub Thumping had been written 2 years earlier, they could have used that song because she does indeed fall down and get up again.
Those moments were like.
I cried. I cry at Nike commercials, though. I need to be. I swear, I really do.
No
Did you
shame
cry
there.
During the Charles Barkley? No, I'm kidding. that's a moment where, I mean, hey, sisters, let's get up and fucking applaud right now.
Yeah.
Because this is when we're running shit.
Yeah. Like, you're going to make me cry just thinking about it.
It's great.
I'm
like
thinking about it.
That's
because they tease it out with just moments of like failing, doing a thing. And then you get that amazing montage where she, like, every time it happens, she dusts herself off and gets back to it. And it's like, hell yeah.
Absolutely. It's a fantastic moment, and it's fucking well earned. I thought that was great.
I just want to say that in so many Marvel movies, it's the action sequence, the end action sequence, that's the big thing that everyone loves. In this, it's the emotional moments that takes the place of the action sequence.
Yes.
Because it's like Maria Rambeau saying, like, this is in you. This is what this is exactly what you are. And like, that's where people get the chill. That's where people are getting the thrill, is like that. And so even though the action sequences at the end aren't, you know, like amazing to me, it's just like, yeah, she's like busting through some stuff, whatever. Like there's an emotional resonance that I don't often get from some of these movies where I'm like, oh, that's my action sequence, actually.
Yeah, that moment where she does sort of like come to appreciate what she's got inside of her. And when she takes the thing off her neck that sort of like, you know, inhibits her power and just like lets it all go. Like, yeah, that gives me the same chills that I get. It's the Wonder Woman running out into no man's land.
That's what I was going to say. Hers is an action sequence, whereas this one is the emotional sequence.
Sure.
And I still have the same fucking reaction to it.
Yeah. I had the same reaction to Wonder Woman walking out during that as when Jude Law is yelling at Danvers.
Yeah.
Like, oh, come on. Oh, he's just yelling all these terrible
Prove
things
it
at
to
him.
Me.
Yeah. And she just fucking shoots him right into the like cave, X amount of feet behind her. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I want to see. Fuck you. I don't have time to hear whatever your bullshit is that you're saying, bro. To the wall
it
with
is,
you.
It is.
That's
it
great.
Is the debate me of the movie. It's just like, he's like fucking Ben Shapiro, Tucker Carlson going like, debate me. And she's like, I don't have time.
Boom.
We talked a little bit about it with her clothes. Y'all were okay with the music choices in this movie?
Some of the needle drops.
As far as like, hey, this is the 90s.
Well, I mean, they do. The 90s stuff gets a little on the nose at times. Like when they put the disc in the computer, we have to wait for it to load up.
I liked that.
You know, I mean, it's not that any one of them was bad. It's just the number of those jokes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Like the Alta Vista joke made me laugh, you know, because I remember that was like, oh, yeah, there used to be other search engines. But like when you have her, when you play like I'm Just a Girl on the soundtrack, it's like, okay, I get it, movie.
Everyone's waiting for that to come.
Yeah.
It would have been great if they just did spider webs instead. They're just like, fuck you, you're not getting I'm Just a Girl. You're getting Walking in the Spider Webs.
I really just wanted more variety in their music choices there. I feel like we got a Garbage song, we got an Elastica song.
No Doubt.
We got a No Doubt song in there. I want
it. Whole.
Whole.
I mean, they're
where's
kinda...
my En Vogue at? Where's my MC Light in the 90s? Where my, yeah. Where's my Queen
Thank
Latifah
you.
In the 90s?
Thank you.
Like, Destiny's Child.
There's certain things, certain moments where it's like...
Because they dominated the radio in the 90s.
A fucking 80s.
Dominated.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Where it's like, if we're going to be going to this well of the 90s, we don't just have to go to the alternative 90s, MTV 90s, like all this stuff.
The Lollapalooza 90s.
Yeah, absolutely. all this stuff was happening out there. Reach into that well and like fucking... head first, dive into it.
I absolutely agree. I think the music supervision was just something I didn't actually talk about that much in the review. It's kind of disappointing because there's so much to cull from. I don't know who did it. I think it was a dude. Well, I think it was a white dude.
He was music supervisor.
I think it was a white dude. And it's just one of those things where, like, if you ask any girl at that time what they were listening to,
right.
Like, they were listening to En Vogue. They were listening to Monica. They were listening to all of
Monica,
these. Brandy.
Yes, Brandy, you know,
like,
yes.
They were listening to all of
Yo-yo.
These people. Like, they dominated everything. And then also we had Hole. And also we, you know, like,
right.
You lived kind of two separate lives, I think, for most girls. Like,
yes.
no matter what color, I think, too.
Yeah.
Something that you raised in your rap review that I thought was a really good point was in the scene that you're talking about where they're choosing the colors for the costume, and she... takes the red, blue, and gold from the Air Force t-shirt that Monica is wearing. This movie kind of wants to have its cake and eat it too in terms of the plot is about imperialism being bad and, you know, being against sort of genocide and mistreating refugees and a lot of stuff. And at the same time, we're like, yay, Air Force! And it's kind of like, you know... the U.S. isn't blameless in the sort of thing that you're pinning on the bad guys of this movie. And to then make her take those colors on feels a little disingenuous.
Yeah.
They're trying to have their cake and eat it too. Yeah, it's very strange to want me to cheer for those things where I'm like,
Are we the best example of that?
Yeah.
Very much so. One other thing I wanted to talk about.
Cats.
We have not talked about the cat.
What do you want to do? Do you want to say something about the cat?
I love the cat.
The cat was hilarious. Amazing.
I'm so into Flerkins.
Yes.
I've obviously started calling my cat a Flerkin. And today I...
Has it laid eggs yet?
No. Today I actually talked to the animal trainer of the cats.
Oh, wow.
For Captain Marvel, for Vulture. I've got a piece coming out this week.
Wow.
And it's four cats, and I love them, and they're so cute to the point where apparently the lead cat, Reggie, he knew when his take was bad. He would like stop and then go back to one.
Back to one, please. Back to one. Reggie wants to go back to one.
I'm sorry. I don't want to be difficult here. I just want to get it right.
I know that they're just like catering to my lowest common denominator. I'm just like, I'm a cat woman. I love cats. So I know that it's kind of silly, but I also just fucking fall for it because it is too adorable. Constantly. And it's like, it is a very integral role.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not just, there's a cat. It's like, there's a character.
Absolutely.
I'm not a cat person at all. And I am in love with Goose. And I can't wait to see Goose versus Thanos. That's pretty much what I'm living for.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. No. It has a very important part of the story. I thought they handled it very well. Fantastic. Now, something that I personally have not been paying attention to, but I know that it has been happening. There are trolls out there who were trying to take the movie down by writing negative reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. They failed miserably. This movie was one of the biggest Marvel openings. I feel like it was in the same ranks of Black Panther when it opened. Why weren't they successful this time around? This is a question that I have. I don't like to give that much power to the trolls. So like when they don't like something, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
I think I'm lucky to have that. I'm lucky to have that because I'm a dude, and a lot of those movies are literally geared towards me.
Yeah, I think a great many people don't give a fuck. in this case, because they were taking on, you know, this hugely successful franchise, and there were a lot of people that wanted to see this movie and either didn't care that it had a female lead or were actively excited that it had a female lead. So, you know, I think it's easier for goons like that to take on a movie like Ghostbusters, where there hasn't been a new one in a while, and they somehow managed to create this narrative around that movie that it was like totally, you know, throwing out the old movies, despite the fact that pretty much every living person from Ghostbusters was in it.
Right.
You know,
Dan Aykroyd produced it, you know?
Exactly, yeah. But somehow they were able to poison that well, and it still makes me mad because I like that movie a lot. But yeah, I think this one, they really, you know, they and the thing is, like, we give them too much credence. They tried to do the same thing to Mad Max Fury Road, you'll recall.
Because, oh, see, I forgot about
yeah,
that.
See? Like,
yeah, you cannot keep that shit down. Exactly. It will roll the fuck over you.
Because they thought Charlize Theron's character was too dominant over Max and blah, 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 blah. But yeah, that didn't do a damn thing. And this didn't do a damn thing. So, you know, I just, what I find fascinating is, what do these little
shits.
Yeah, so I don't even want to call them men. What do these little shits fear so much about a movie that's female-centered?
I can't handle too much hate. I've already got my hatred set aside for some political figures, and I just can't.
Yes.
I can't put like, too much
to the real
in other
evil in the world.
Yeah, it's in the Mike Pence basket. I can't spare it from Marvel.
So it's a harder thing for. But I think that we should say that, like, yes, they didn't squash this movie. But the thing is that, you know, they often in smaller factions and very insidiously continue to do this in ways to smaller films by women. You know, like. We can't forget how the trolls continue to attack IMDb ratings for movies directed by women. And these are indie films that, you know, women may or may not get a second or third chance to direct a film because these fuckers keep going on Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb and ruining the audience scores. So they may not be squashing this one, but there are smaller films that they can squash.
I think the general rule here is, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes number, for whatever problems you may have with it, you have to pass a certain number of requirements to be a critic whose review is counted on Rotten Tomatoes. IMDb scores and the Rotten Tomatoes viewer thing, anybody can go vote for without ever having seen a second of the movie.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. So let's let the people know. Should they screen, stream, or skip Captain Marvel? Alonzo, I'll start with you, buddy.
Oh, screen it. You know, these are big movies that should be seen and enjoyed with all their loudness and all their sort of, you know, visual razzmatazz. And, you know, just when you buy your ticket, just think you're making some little asshole cry at home.
Yeah. When I say screen it, I had fun. I'm probably going to end up watching this again when it comes to, you know, Netflix or VOD in the next year or something like that, just because it's fun. Yeah,
It's a fun movie, and I'm looking forward to going back and revisiting it after the fact, and really trying to appreciate more Brie Larson's acting choices. So I say screen it if you haven't seen it yet, and when it's available to stream, scream the fuck out of that, yo! It's super fun, and turn that bitch all the way up too. I haven't gotten a shout out to Pinar Toprak. I hope I pronounced your name right, but she is the woman who composed the score for this movie. And when we weren't hearing 90s songs, I was all in on the score. I thought it was fucking fantastic. Mm. It really has, like, sometimes superhero movies, I feel like lately, they just have a very generic superhero sound to them. Yes,
yeah.
And I felt like this one has a Captain Marvel theme. And I really appreciated that, y'all. So yeah, that's what's up about Captain Marvel, y'all. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Marvel movies. But first, why don't you listen to a little message from one of our other Max Fun podcasts.
Good morning, class.
Good morning, Ms. Banks.
Can anyone tell me which holiday is coming up? This major holiday celebrates giving and artistic expression.
Max Fun Drive!
That's right, kids. It's Max Fun Drive. And when do we celebrate?
March 18th through March 29th.
Very good, Billy. Now, who can tell us the story of Max Fun Drive?
I know.
Me.
All right, Trisha.
Once a year, the Pod Fairy comes to town and hands out cool enamel pins of your favorite podcast.
Oh, they're so effing cool.
Whoa, yes, Trish, but there's more to the Max Fun Drive holiday than cool pins. Max Fun Drive is the time of year when all around the world, people put aside their differences and focus on the spirit of family, friends, community, and podcasts. Bye. Oh, okay, class. Don't forget to listen to your favorite podcast from March 18th to 29th. I'll expect full pod reports when you're back. I have got to ask someone why these classes are only 45 seconds long.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Cremona. With me in the studio are
Alonzo Duralde,
April Wolf.
We wanted to talk real quick just about, I feel like we are at an interesting moment with Marvel movies now where Avengers is ending. We're going to be introduced to this next new group of Marvel superheroes who are taking over, which means Brie Larson is Captain Marvel, Tom Holland is Spider-Man, and then who comes after that? We don't really know.
I think the Eternals, I've been hearing there's some auditions happening and that there might be a gay Eternal.
We don't know what's
happening. Eternally gay.
Honey.
Yes.
Ain't no other kind.
We don't know what's happening really with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
When you get to the TV world of Marvel, Netflix has gotten rid of everything.
Well, that's, I think, because Disney Plus is starting, so presumably they'll be heading over there.
But I feel like we're in this moment of like, okay, Marvel, the reset button,
well,
now what?
Well, okay, I think we have, there's got to be at least one more Black Panther and at least one more Doctor Strange.
You think there'll be another Doctor Strange?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, yeah, after the Avengers last one,
after
I think.
After Endgame,
that,
yeah. Like, I think we can all agree that after Endgame, no one major is going to be dead, right?
Like, 100%.
It's just like Captain America, right? Isn't he supposed to be the one who's dying because that dude's leaving?
I think I've heard that, yeah.
Yes. Would you be surprised if Robert Downey Jr. Came back as Iron Man? I would. I think Chris Evans are out.
They're donezo, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they should come back, honestly.
But
yeah.
And I agree with that, absolutely.
So I see, like we're just starting with Doctor Strange, we're just starting with Black Panther, so they've got one, two more movies apiece to go.
I would be surprised if Doctor Strange comes back.
I can't imagine that they... I don't think... The way this series plays out, mm-hmm. they don't give you a movie that you headline and then not use you again. Like, except for the Hulk movie, which no one liked. Everybody's gotten a sequel. Like, there have been three Thor movies and three Captain Americas and, you know...
Did Doctor Strange do well enough to get a sequel?
I think it was a hit.
I don't remember. I thought it was okay.
I liked that one a lot, actually.
I liked it. That was one where it was like visually, I was all on board. Yeah. And story-wise, I was like, this just kind of feels like...
Oh, see, I thought the story was great just because I think because it doesn't wind up with this being like who can punch each other the hardest. Mm-hmm. He actually outsmarts the other guy.
You know,
and so I thought that was cool.
I don't mind him as a character. I'm a big Bunderbatch fan.
I mean, yeah, he's kind of Tony Stark with a cape, but
that was my problem with it. I just felt like he was not Tony Stark, but Tony Stark.
Right, but I don't know. I still wanted to, like, just that taste we get of him in Thor Ragnarok. I was like, oh yeah, Doctor Strange, more of this, please. You know,
yeah. Will Marvel now? I mean, I feel like they can afford to take these chances as far as like going, give us a Thor Ragnarok, and that's not an anomaly. It's like, yeah, give us these weird kind of like, this is funny,
yeah,
but still a Marvel movie. Guardians of the Galaxy. I was a fan of the second one and not of the first one because it was like,
really?
Yeah, now you can do these things where you're not tied to telling us what.
And you're talking stylistically too, not just story, right?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, they could make a black and white one if they wanted to. They could make a musical if they wanted to. And I think people would still show up. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I finally saw fucking Into the Spider-Verse, and I would love a noir Spider-Man movie.
Well, Spider-Man noir, yeah.
Spider-Man noir, I should say, yeah.
And Spider-Verse isn't technically part of the MCU because it's sort of the Sony Spider-Man, like with Venom, but yeah, I think that there have been enough of these movies now that there's a real openness to playing with the rules, you know? I mean, Spider-Verse is a perfect example. Like, I think if you had tried to throw parallel universes at a movie audience 10 years ago, they'd be like, wait, huh? But I think now you can be as weird as the comics are in terms of, like, you know, Earth 2 or, you know, whatever sort of cuckoo concepts that comic book readers have embraced for decades. I think movie viewers have become immersed enough in this kind of stuff now that you can get a little nutty, and it doesn't have to be like dumbed down, but sort of normaled down for a mass audience. I think the mass audience is on the page with them, and they're ready for wherever they want to take us.
What do you think the move is next for Marvel as far as like bringing people in creative wise? They brought in the Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden, who I haven't seen Half Nelson, but they come from the indie film world.
You need to see their film that is literally called Asuka, the Sugar. It's about Dominican baseball players.
Mm-hmm. I saw Sugar and I was disappointed in it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, shit.
Well, that's them,
dude.
Too.
Mississippi yes. Grind is okay. Ben Mendelsohn is
amazing.
I heard
that's good.
That.
I haven't seen it.
And, you know, we didn't really talk about Ben Mendelsohn too much in our convo, but
yes.
Dude is
He's
great.
He's really good in
He's
this.
He's like, yeah, fucking awesome. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is that weird thing still, though, of, like, I think we still think about them firing Edgar Wright from Ant-Man, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's sort of.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so it's this notion of, like, you know, I think in a way, Kevin Feige ultimately is sort of the auteur of all of these in the way that like a TV showrunner sort of molds how a show looks and what the tone of it is and that kind of thing. So, you know, I would like to think that, yes, they feel secure enough that they could bring in different voices and different points of view. But with the Edgar Wright thing still fairly recent, I think that we're also going to see a lot of, you know, filmmakers, I mean, I don't know. And at the same time, obviously, Ryan Coogler did come in and put a stamp on Black Panther. So I don't really know where the line is drawn as far as like, you know, and Taika Waititi on Ragnarok,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
I think they're doing indie shit. I think they're going to go more towards indie shit.
I hope.
The way that you, like, if you look at the interviews with Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, the way that they came in and pitched it, and they were like very firmly in the Kelly Sue DeConnick world of Captain Marvel, uh-huh. and they had this very clear idea about, like, you know, here's something weird that we're going to do. Like, I think that they're going to, like, invite indie filmmakers to just come in and pitch something weird.
Yeah, I think they can afford to now. If they don't do it, it would be strange. Like, they don't have anything to lose.
Yeah.
Do you all have a... We'll cap it at three. Do you have a top three Marvel movies, what they've done
no.
right? No?
Because I've had to do a ranking every for this whole thing.
That's right. Yeah, you mentioned
it. I have it right in front of me. My number three is Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one.
Wow.
Which I think is, that was 2014. I think that was the moment where it first felt like, oh, they're willing to play around with this some, which is, again, why the Edgar Wright firing was a shock to me, mm-hmm. because this felt like a James Gunn movie in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And it felt like they were willing to sort of play around with this grander mythos at play here. My number two is Captain America the Winter Soldier, which I think holds up really well and is – you could take it out of – the MCU and just have it be a thing on its own, and I think it would still work, and I think the characterizations are interesting. And my favorite is still the first Avengers movie, because it, for me, it pressed all of my buttons of being a comic book reader as a kid. And, you know, the way when people talk about like how Spielberg and Lucas, when they did Raiders of the Lost Ark, really understood serials and understood the language of them and the appeal of them and why they worked and what audiences got out of them. Joss Whedon gets comics in a way that I think a lot of people who make comic book movies either don't or don't choose to do. But watching that first Avengers movie was to me like lying on the floor of my living room reading an Avengers comic. You know, the banter and the action and all the stuff. It was just, I just still find delightful.
Hell yeah. That's what's up. April, you don't have a top three because...
I mean, it's not necessarily my forte, I would say.
Sure.
And I kind of see them mostly all the same, except for, like, Black Panther does really well. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, it's one of those things where it's a movie.
If you had to pick three out of the stack, like, that you think sort of aren't just the same as the other 21.
I don't know. I also haven't seen all 21, so
okay.
I don't think I can make a fair assessment.
What are your top three, Ricky?
I will say Captain America, Winter Soldier.
Okay.
The first Avengers movie,
okay.
because I just couldn't believe that. To me, that was like, I can't believe this is working right now.
Right,
like they're like everything is going right. I couldn't believe that. And Black Panther.
All right.
Like, those, all three of those had moments in them where, like, I just can't believe I'm seeing this on this scale, and I'm not the only one who's enjoying it as much as I am.
Oh,
everybody in the theater is losing their goddamn minds.
I think I've watched Thor Ragnarok more than any of the other ones, so I'm going to say that that's just the one I like.
Yeah. Well, the upside is there's an Avengers movie coming out in 2 months. So we will have this whole discussion again. Ooh. And we will be talking all about Marvel. So check back in with us then. So let's knock out some staff picks real quick before we go. April, I'll start with you. What do you have for the people?
A little zombie flick.
Yes.
Came out a few years ago. It's called Life After Beth. It is Jeff Baena's movie. He made it before he made the movie The Little Hours. I think both are on Netflix right now. But it's one of those movies where the trailers, when it came out, didn't really tell you what it was. It was just like, oh, what's this indie movie with Dane DeHaan and Molly Shannon and John C. Reilly and Aubrey Plaza? And then when you watch it, it starts one way and very quickly kind of goes off the rails in a different direction than what you think. But it's really funny and lovely and has a good heart and is also a little bit kind of dark edged, even though it has that heart. So I really appreciate it. And Aubrey Plaza does, she gives a really disgusting performance.
Nice.
Like, completely disgusting. So, yeah. Life After Beth.
And where is that at? Is that streaming right now?
Yeah, I think you can find it on Netflix right now.
Okay, that's what's up.
So we very much in passing mentioned the death of Stanley Donen on the show a few weeks ago, and I kind of just wanted to take a moment to like circle back around him because he's my Michael Mann.
Like, okay. All right.
He's directed
like
some of my favorite movies ever. You know, started out as, you know, one of the great musicals directors of all time. You know, he did Funny Face and Singing in the Rain and It's Always Fair Weather and On the Town, but then, you know, made really great comedy dramas like Two for the Road. He made The Outrageous Bedazzled. You know, just a very versatile filmmaker and I mean, responsible for some real stinkers, I will admit. His last film was Blame It on Rio. But, you know, overall, I think a really great, and one of sort of the last great kind of like Hollywood golden age directors. And somebody online did a piece about, here's all the places where you can't stream Stanley Donen movies. And it was an article about how the fact that basically now with Filmstruck gone, a lot of times if you're looking for old movies to stream, you are SOL. Like, it's not on Netflix. It's not on Amazon Prime. It's, you know, if maybe you can buy it from Amazon, but you can't rent it. Like,
they're not being able to rent it to stream even.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just really difficult to track down his stuff. So I wanted to recommend a movie of his that I think is just a delight. And I don't know anybody who doesn't like this movie. So buy the Criterion disc maybe the next time they have a 50% off sale. Charade, which is the best Alfred Hitchcock movie that Alfred Hitchcock ever made, a sort of murder mystery thriller with Audrey Hepburn and Cary Grant, two of the most charismatic movie stars ever to live. The one movie they made together, their chemistry is off the charts. Great Peter Stone script. The Criterion disc has a great Peter Stone, Stanley Donen commentary, and they're like two old guys like ragging on each other and like occasionally remembering that the movie's on. But it is a wonderful, wonderful movie. If you've never seen it, you are in for a total treat. And if you have, you know, you're always going to be in the mood to watch it again. So Charade.
That's what's up, yo. Oh, hell yeah. I want to fucking watch it right now. Oh, well, I mean, I feel like we, as a fucking country, we were just, like, obsessed with the most depressing, hardest documentaries to watch. I watch Abducted in Plain Sight.
Whoa.
I watch Leaving Neverland.
Oof.
And I was like, I need what my parents in the 70s, all our parents in the 70s needed after a hard day's work is cocaine and disco. So I watched Studio 54, the documentary on Netflix.
Nice.
And it's fantastic. It was really great. I was expecting kind of like a little bit of just like a fluff piece on it because I feel like we all know about Studio 54. It was the club in the 70s and that's where Andy Warhol went and Mick Jagger went and
Grace Jagger.
Jones and Bianca Jagger and Jerry Hall, like all these celebrities went. And I thought that it was just the one dude who Mike Myers played in 54. I thought it was all just
Steve
his
Rebell.
Story. Yes, and it's not. It's more than that. There was two dudes who owned that club.
Ian Schrager.
Thank you. I didn't realize they went to prison. I didn't realize that there was just so much behind what was going on that what was going on in that club that what we know on the surface level, that I was just very happy to watch it. And I did so much cocaine while listening to it. No, it's just a really great documentary, really fun to watch, great score. They're able to use all the songs in there. And it's streaming on Netflix right now. So Studio 54. Shout out to everybody who leaves us a review on the show, but this week we have no new reviews because the Max Fun Drive starts March 18th. So everybody out there, get ready to donate, show some love to our show, show some love to Switchblade Sisters, show some love to all the Max Fun shows that are out there. We exist because you put you are gracious enough to donate and keep this network going. So thank you so much to everybody who donates. Max Fun Drive starts March 18th, and we will be letting you know more and more all the special things that we are doing during the drive.
Spoiler, our pin looks awesome.
Woo! Candela! Candela, coño! That's what our pin should have said. No. I will come to your house and yell that at you while you put the pin on. April and Alonzo, it is a pleasure to see y'all.
Always a delight.
Always a goddamn delight. Shout out to D-Light as well. Lady, what's her name?
Lady Miss Keir.
See what I'm saying?
That's what, what is her name?
If you have a
comment.
Yeah. The chills. All right. Okay, I can't go into D-Light. I can't go into a D-Light dive right now. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, why don't you tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod? Our Facebook group is www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYourPodcast. Or you can always just send us an email at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. Go ahead and leave us a call. Go ahead and leave us a message on the Who Shot line, WSY-803-1664. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. And it's a new one, y'all. You are what is up out there.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.